Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright. Round yon virgin mother and child, holy infant so tender and mild, sleep in heavenly peace, sleep in heavenly peace. That's the image that all of us would love to have of the first Christmas, isn't it? Sleep in heavenly peace. But apparently, either the writer of the song has never been around a newborn baby, or heavenly peace has a time limit of about 90 minutes. I can't imagine it was all that peaceful, because you had the baby, you had the animals. It was chaos, folks. I mean, I have six children, and so does my wife. And, you know, we've done that rodeo before. We know that it's not always serene and peaceful. There are those moments, and you love those moments. And maybe that's what the writer was capturing, was one of those moments. But let's rewind it even a day. Bethlehem is in chaos right now. Hundreds of people are showing up to Bethlehem all at the same time to register for the mandatory census that has to take place. And this is to a city that is only a couple hundred people in size to begin with. This is not a booming metropolis. This is not Jerusalem. This is Bethlehem. And you can imagine they didn't have a Holiday Inn Express with free Wi-Fi, you know, and really nice shower heads. The only lodging in the area is an inn. And that inn was not what we know of today. It opened its doors to the occasional traveler who was passing through Bethlehem on their way to somewhere more important. This wasn't a destination for people. And that has long since now been overwhelmed by the swelling crowds that had to return to Bethlehem. So rooms are doubled up. Extra bedding has been laid out in every available corner of this place. People are sleeping in the kitchen, in the courtyard, in the hallways. It's not just that there are no more rooms for them. There's literally no room at the inn. And that's the scene that we can now extrapolate from this story told to us by Luke in his gospel. Let's look at that together in Luke 2, verses 1 through 7. At that time, the Roman Emperor Augustus decreed that a census should be taken throughout the Roman Empire. This was the first census taken when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And all returned to their own ancestral towns to register for this census. And because Joseph was a descendant of King David, he had to go to Bethlehem in Judea, David's ancient home. He traveled there from the village of Nazareth in Galilee. He took with him Mary, his fiancée, who was now obviously pregnant, which is Luke's nice way of saying she was ready to pop. And while they were there, the time came for her baby to be born, and she gave birth to her first child, a son. She wrapped him snugly in strips of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no lodging available for them, or as in the way that most of us know it in other translations, there was no room for them in the inn. And usually when we see Christmas productions done, you see this portrayed, the Bethlehem innkeeper is often cast as something of a villain. You know, he's the one, he's kind of this Scrooge-like character, so intent on money-making that he forgets all about hospitality, let alone the birth of the Messiah. And we have this mental picture of him slamming the door shut in Joseph's face, you know, and this ready-to-explode Mary, shutting them out in the cold as he throws them into the stable out back, you know, go sleep with the animals, and you're lucky I'm giving you that. Thank you, Grayson. And here's the thing. Just like your old man. You're the one who always laughed at my jokes, and now I got your son. This is great. And here's the thing. No matter what we determine about the innkeeper, it's got to be something that we only play out in our minds because Scripture is silent on the issue. This is something that we kind of fill in the gaps culturally and historically and anecdotally as we talk about what the innkeeper is. But personally, I really doubt that the innkeeper was a bad guy. I just don't have that image of him. The guy was in over his head. To say he was busy is like saying Bill Gates has a few bucks to spare. I mean, this guy is really busy. He was swamped, taking care of his customers, making change in the various currencies that were now represented there, keeping peace among all the guests. He's completely overwhelmed. And there really is no privacy to be had anywhere here. There are bodies laying everywhere. I'm sure more than one person snored loudly. Tempers were likely to be very short, and he had to manage all of this, probably without a staff to speak of. It's not like this amount of business was normal to him, and so he is coming apart at the seams. And the tragedy is not that Jesus had to be born in a stable, because the key part of that statement isn't the fact that it took place in a stable, guys. It's that the Son of God was born, period. That's the key. Jesus was born. That's not a tragedy at all. That was a miracle. The tragedy was that when the most important birth in human history took place, it took place at the innkeeper's backyard, and he most likely missed it entirely. And it wasn't because he was bad or evil. It's because he was busy. He had too much going on. And we get really defensive when it comes to Christmas. We get really defensive because we're like proud of Christmas and we want to own Christmas. Somebody wishes us happy holidays and we think they're trying to take Jesus away from us. Oh, yeah? Well, Merry Christmas to you! They're probably not trying to take Jesus away from you. They're probably just being polite. But you know what? Some people are literally trying to take Jesus away from us at Christmas. A few years back, an atheist group posted this billboard in Times Square: "Keep the Merry, dump the myth." That was the billboard that they put up. Definitely, there's an agenda there. Now, is that offensive? Not to me. That doesn't offend me. It's just wrong. It doesn't offend me. I just know they're wrong. I can't change the way they think any more than they can change the way I think. All I can do is live my life and the witness and share what God has done in my life. You see, they're not my enemies, and they're not the enemy of Christmas. The single biggest enemy of Christmas isn't a group of atheists. It's what I would call the cultural kidnapping of Christmas, where we've taken Christmas and slid it away from what Jesus is and what he wants to do in us and through us. It's actually you and I who have a greater chance of messing up Christmas than a group of atheists do. The danger is that in the middle of all the busyness, the shopping, the parties, the decorating, even the church services, that we can miss out on the real meaning, just like the innkeeper from Bethlehem probably did 2,000 years ago. Don't miss Jesus this Christmas. Don't miss him because of your schedule. Don't miss him because of your family. Don't miss him because of work, because of finances. Don't miss Jesus. See, here's the ironic part. The irony is the innkeeper's struggle didn't come because he was going through a rough time. His struggle came because he was doing so well. He was doing overwhelmingly well, and it knocked him off the path. He had so much business, he didn't know what to do with it all. Sometimes it's not tragedy. Sometimes it's our success, our prosperity, and our comfort that leads to our biggest struggle when it comes to missing Jesus. I don't feel like I need God, so I don't pursue God. I'm content to live without him. I've got so much going on right now, I just don't have time for all this God stuff in my life. And here's the thing, God doesn't want you to stop your life for him. He wants to engage every part of your life. God doesn't want you to stop living your life for him. He wants to engage you in every part of your life. As you are living your life, as you are working, as you are doing your hobbies, as you are watching the Cowboys, as you are doing your thing, let God engage you in that moment. Jesus wasn't born to occupy a date on your calendar each December. He wasn't even born to get one day at the beginning of each week. Jesus was born to change our entire lives. John 10:10 says, "I have come that they might have life, and they would have it to the full." Jesus came to bring us maximum life. That's what Jesus was born to do, to give us meaning and give us purpose, to infuse our lives with his purpose. And by changing your life, Jesus wants to change others through you, through your example. And once you make the decision to follow Jesus and live for him, that becomes our mission, to help others see the goodness of God through us. But we can get all worked up about the innkeeper. How could he turn away Mary, the mother of Jesus, when she's about to give birth? After all, this is the guy who hung out the no vacancy sign for the Son of God, right? That's what the innkeeper did. It's far easier to focus on the innkeeper's rejection of Jesus instead of our own. Now, wait a minute, Pastor, I didn't reject Jesus. Let's look at what Matthew says in Matthew 25. "Then the king will turn to those on his left and say, 'For I was hungry, and you didn't feed me. I was thirsty and you didn't give me a drink. I was a stranger and you didn't invite me into your home. I was naked and you didn't give me clothing. I was sick and in prison and you didn't visit me.' And they will reply, 'Lord, when did we ever see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and not help you?' And he will answer, 'I tell you the truth, when you refuse to help the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you are refusing to help me.'" The reality is anytime we don't show love, anytime we don't put others' needs above our own, we are rejecting Jesus. Anytime we don't let the love and the light of Jesus show through us and into the world around us, we're pushing Jesus to the stable out back. We're saying, you go back there, I'm going to live my life here. So here's the question every one of us needs to answer tonight on this Christmas Eve. Is there room in your schedule for Jesus? Is there room in your heart for Jesus? Is there room in your relationships for him? Is there room in your job for him? Is there room in your family for him? Is there room in the inn of your life for Jesus? We know Jesus is the reason for the season, but we've talked a lot here at Trilogy about how this should be a season for a reason, that it should have purpose behind it, about living with intentionality, about reaching out to those who need to experience God's love and allowing the light of God to shine through us. I'm not asking you to not be busy. That's probably not going to happen for any of us anytime soon. We are a busy people. I'm asking you to allow God into your busyness. Let God in. Let the light of Jesus shine through you at work. Serve those around you at your kids' sporting events. Be an example of God's love at your book club. That while you're running errands and dealing with the chaos of the mall, that you look for opportunities to love other people. Make Jesus a part of every aspect of your life. Don't let Jesus be a part of your life. Let every part of your life be centered in Jesus. Let him change you, and by changing you, let him change others through you. He was born for just that reason. And as the worship team comes back to join me, and we're going to wrap up, I want to conclude with a story about a boy who really understood what Christmas is supposed to be all about. There's a boy named Jimmy who was in the eighth grade, and due to a learning disability that Jimmy had, he didn't have the same opportunities that a lot of the other students had. This particular year at their school, they had planned a Christmas production that they were going to be doing for all the other students and the families in the community, and every student wanted to be involved in this Christmas production. But Jimmy wanted to desperately. He wanted to be in this place so badly. And the teacher doubted that he would be able to memorize his lines, and so she initially said, "I'm sorry, Jimmy, you can help out on the side, but you're not going to be able to be in it." But he wanted to have a speaking part so bad, and the students all wanted to include him. So Jimmy was assigned the role of the innkeeper in Bethlehem, primarily because that character had only two words to say in the whole play. He only had two words to memorize, and that was, "No room." No room. And then after Mary begged for special consideration because she was pregnant, he was to repeat the same line again. No room. Teacher thought, okay, Jimmy can handle this. We'll give him this part. And eventually the day of the performance came, and the performance went great with the normal kid antics. Lots of family and friends were in the audience, and Mary and Joseph at the critical moment approached the inn, and they knock on the door. Jimmy opened the door, and he says flawlessly, "No room." Then Mary said, "But I'm so very tired, and I'm going to have a baby real soon. And if I don't find a safe place for my baby to be born, I don't know what I'm going to do." And Jimmy froze. And the teacher starts freaking out a little bit inside, like, oh no, he forgot his one line that he had. He doesn't remember it, and he's going to be embarrassed. What do I do? And he froze, and just time stopped. And then all of a sudden, Jimmy broke the silence. And he says, "I know what I'm supposed to say, but you know what? You can have my room." And of course, the whole place went up for grabs at that point. What do you do with that? Kind of changes the Christmas story a little bit from that point forward. But Jimmy understood. He was willing to go against the script in order to follow the love that was in his heart. And those of us who follow Jesus have to be willing to do the same thing, to go against the cultural script that has been written for us, which is me first, which is I'm going to get what I want, what I need, and to be willing to put God before anything and be able to put others above ourselves. to make it more about this time of year, more about gifts and parties and decorating and constant busyness, and to make it all about Jesus, what he wants to do in our lives and what he wants to do through us to change the lives of other peoples, to see God write new stories in people's hearts. When we give up our place for Jesus, we're flipping that script upside down. We're taking what our culture says is important and replacing it with what God says is important. And that's when Christmas reaches its full potential. So tonight, I want you to ask yourself the question, am I willing to give up my place for Jesus? Don't repeat the mistake of the innkeeper. Don't push Jesus out back somewhere. Give Jesus your place. Give him your life. Would you bow your heads with me in prayer? We're going to close the service. And as we get ready to pray, I just want to ask quickly tonight, you may be here and say, Pastor Jeff, I don't really have a relationship with God. Jesus is not first place in my life. And I want to ask if maybe tonight and this Christmas Eve, you would say, you know what? I want to make that decision today. You see, that's why Jesus came, so that way we could have a right relationship with God. Every one of us is separated from God because of the mistakes we've made, the sin in our lives. We don't have a real relationship with God. That connection is broken. And Jesus came to restore that. And not and only through his birth, his birth and his sinless life, but then eventually his death, where he went to the cross, and the Bible tells us that he took our sin and he carried it to the cross. He paid the penalty for my sin and for yours. And he was resurrected 3 days later and demonstrated his victory over sin and death. And now he offers eternal life to you and to me, that we could be forgiven for our past. We could be forgiven for our future and what the mistakes we will make. And we could be restored to right relationship with God. That is the full meaning of Christmas. And so tonight, if you're here and you'd say, Pastor Jeff, you know what, before I leave, I just want to make sure my heart is right with God. I want to pray with you. If that's you, would you just lift your hand real quick and I'll pray with you before you leave tonight. Make sure that you're right with God before you leave. You can know that God is first in your heart and in your life. I'll wait just a second. If that's you, just let me see your hand so I can pray with you tonight. All right, let's stand together. Throughout this month, we've been talking about the Christmas story from different perspectives, viewing the miracle of Jesus' birth through the eyes of some different people, Herod, the shepherds, Mary, and tonight, the innkeeper. And here's the thing, every time you meet someone who has met Jesus, your perspective gets a little bit clearer, who he really is and what he's all about. Maybe some of you recently met Jesus for the very first time. Maybe it hasn't been that long for you. That's incredible. And the other side of that decision, and it's true for every one of us, regardless of how long we've served him, we have the responsibility of making sure others are seeing Jesus through us. Matthew 5 tells us in this way, you are the light of the world. Like a city on a hilltop that cannot be hidden, no one lights a lamp and then puts it under a basket. Instead, a lamp is placed on a stand and where it gives light to everyone in the house. And in the same way, let your good deeds shine out for all to see so that everyone will praise your Heavenly Father. We're going to light our candles tonight. And as we do, I want this to be a reminder of your responsibility to let others see Jesus through you. I've been a part of a lot of candle lighting services over the years. And I love these moments because as the light spreads throughout the room, it's such a great visual and a reminder for me of how important it is to not keep what God has done for me with me, but to give it away outside the walls of my life. I'll light the candles up front, and then I'm going to have them turn and allow you to light your candle off theirs. Once yours has been lit, allow the person next to you to light theirs off yours and so on. This is very important. Do not try to light someone else's candle because you pour wax on them. Let the unlit candle light off of yours. Okay, this is a case none of you have done a candle lighting before. I just want to make sure everybody's clear on that concept. It's important. Parents, please make the decision as to whether or not your child is ready for their own candle or if they can participate by helping you hold yours. That's totally up to you. And as we light the candles tonight, we're going to sing together Silent Night. And I want our prayer to be that God's peace, that peace that's talked about in that song, will be overwhelmingly present in our world this Christmas. That as we make room for Jesus in our lives and even in our busyness, it will overflow into our community, into our homes, and into our world. And as the light spreads throughout the room, remember that effect of letting others see Jesus in us. It spreads. It makes a difference. It changes us, and it changes the people around us. Let's worship together as we light the candles tonight.